Mike is in there and he's trying, and some people were disappointed, and a lot of people were very disappointed that nothing happened with the border. The border, you know, I'll straighten out the border. I don't need anything from Congress.
It's funny, as we debate the border and we debate funding and all of these sorts of things, Trump sort of snapped me back into my memory that, oh, that's right. He did and has and can secure the border without the help of Congress. We've kind of just fallen into this trap, like we need the House to do it. We don't. Joe Biden could, as we all know, on his own.
It seems like the urgency and the rush and the pressure only applies to Republicans. Like, this is such a big deal that you need to pass it this weekend. And it's like, well, hold on a second. If it's such a big deal, then our leverage that we have should get us border security, no problem. If it's so scary and it's so big, then our leverage just increases. But it seems like in all of these scenarios, our leverage is non-existent.
All right, guys. Another great week. Thanks for joining us. A lot of good stuff last week. Thanks for tuning in and sharing the content. Really appreciate that. Also appreciate back last Wednesday, Mike Slater stepped in and helped out. I appreciate that. Always tune in to watch him in the morning on Breitbart Radio. He does a great job there and then does it again. Hardest working guy on the first. A lot to talk to you about. Please take some time right now, though. I will do this. It's normally rude to look at your phone, but do it. Hit that subscribe and notification button. Whether you're watching it on YouTube or Spotify, Rumble, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, hit that subscription button. It helps us. So even if you're in one place, go subscribe to another. Always appreciate that. I want to talk to you about the House bill. Big things happening over the weekend. Big foreign aid packages. Ukraine got $61 billion. It passed 311 to 112. Most of those votes against were from the Republicans. There wasn't actually a majority of the majority, if that makes sense. Israel, $26.3 billion, that passed 366 to 58. And then there was a Taiwan and Indo-Pacific security bill, $15 billion. I mean, hey, look, we don't have the money, but it's nice that we're doing all this. It also included a TikTok divestment aspect in it. We've talked about that before. That's going to the Senate. It's likely to be signed. President Biden says he'll do it. So if there's any silver lining, we got the TikTok thing. Yay. But we spent a lot of money that we don't have, and we didn't do anything about our southern border. I'm going to break that down with our panel today. Chris DeGaulle is here. He literally just sat down with President Trump. We're going to talk about a lot of those issues that he brought up with President Trump. And then Grace Curley is here as well, our good friend from up north in Boston, host of the Grace Curley Show. But I want to tell you about something really interesting that I noticed this morning. You guys remember, I mean, we had a lot of great feedback on the Road to 270 show that we did last week, where I laid out in the map all of the states, all 50 states and the District of Columbia, how Trump can get to 270, the different paths, where everything stands right now. And I noted things can change. But you're not going to guess what happens this morning. Axios puts out a big story that says Doug Sosnick, who is this longtime Democratic operative, he puts out these memos all the time. And what happens? Doug Sosnick tells me that either candidate can win. President Biden has the narrow, though tougher path to 270 electoral votes. Sosnick maps, literally, this is their words, various roads to 270 scenarios for Biden and former President Trump in an interactive map that he lays out and warns Democrats about Minnesota. You saw it here first. We went through every state and the polling in every state. It's so nice that they're acknowledging a week later something that Doug Sosnick did, but just FYI, remember who led the way on that one. So I want to get to a lot of stuff today, right? I want to talk to you about Mike Johnson. He got all this foreign aid stuff through. He got nothing on the border. Why? And what's going to happen to him? Marjorie Taylor Greene says that she has more votes now for this motion to vacate. All she needs to do is make it what they call privileged, and it comes up for a vote. And the word around town is that Democrats will save him. Unbelievable. All right, a lot to get into with that. And as I mentioned, our good friend Chris DeGaulle from Philadelphia Radio had President Trump on this morning. He broke down a lot of stuff. But I want to tell you about one more quick thing that happened over the weekend that came out this morning. Remember President Biden last week made this crazy claim that his uncle was eaten by cannibals? Hopefully you saw it because the mainstream media did everything to bury it. Well, the president of Papua New Guinea responded to Biden's comments saying that the nation is unserving of cannibalism label. Basically saying, hey, don't label us cannibals. Ask for an apology. I don't think he'll get it. Anyway, it's amazing because, you know, you make an outrageous claim like that, no one covers it. Before we get into this great conversation and discussion with Chris Stegall and Grace Curley, I want to tell you about two of the amazing sponsors that help make this show possible. And then we'll break it down with Chris Stegall and Grace Curley. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Think about where you were 10 years ago. Do you think that you're the same person you are? I know sometimes, if I'm being honest, maybe not me, right? I've got a little less energy. I've got a little less muscle tone. I'm working hard. Trust me. One of the things that I've found, though, that helps me is a supplement from my friends at Nugenix, and it's got Tesnor in it right now. This is giving us back that testosterone that we've lost over the years. And I think that if you know what I'm talking about, that lack of energy, the folks at Nugenix are making sure that we've got it. And if you text 231-231 and use Spicer, you will get a free sample. That's easy. No harm, no foul. You get to try it for free and see if it works for you. 231-231, text the word Spicer. And here's the thing. You're going to get a free bottle of Thermo X. It's an unbelievable fat incinerator. So you're helping your testosterone, you're kick-starting your energy levels, and you're also getting this amazing fat incinerator. I mean, what could be a better deal? And it's, if you text 231-231 Spicer, you have nothing to lose. Try it now. You'll get that complimentary bottle. And remember that texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messaging. Consent is not required to purchase. Message and data rates, as always, may apply. This is the number one doctor recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent study conducted by IQVIA 2022. Do you want $250 free right now? $250. I got your attention, didn't I? If you're a business owner that has, I don't know, five or more employees, or maybe you're not the owner, but you're the one who makes big financial decisions, that's your job, you're running the finance part of this or the expenses part, then listen up. I will put $250 in your pocket right now. No strings attached. You just have to go check out and talk to my friends at Ramp, right? Go to ramp.com/Spicer. You will want to find out what they're doing, because if you're the guy or the woman that controls the financing at the company, or you're the owner, Ramp is going to make your expense process unbelievably easier. They issue credit cards that you can give to each one of your employees. You can control all of the expenses. It streamlines so much. I had a guest on the show a couple months ago, and they called me afterward and said, I saw you talking about Ramp. We switched over to Ramp, and you wouldn't believe how much time it saves us. Helps us streamline things. We can put controls in place for our employees, how much they can spend. The reports are fantastic. If you are that business owner or the person in charge of the financing, go to ramp.com/Spicer. Get the $250, but more importantly, make your life a lot easier, because Ramp is going to allow you to get those credit cards, the expense cards for each of your employees, and streamline so much of your expense and accounting systems that it'll make your life so much easier. Ramp.com/Spicer. All right, gang, good to see you. Normally, I'm a ladies first kind of guy, Grace Curley, but Chris Stegall had President Trump on the show this morning. Chris, let me ask you, just what stood out from your conversation with him?
You know, I started the conversation with something I felt that was pretty human, and it was something that I think most of us feel. A woman stopped me at church recently, and she said, Chris, I don't understand. She's not even particularly political, but she said, I don't understand how this judge is keeping him from going to his son's graduation. And so that's how I started. I said, how does your family deal with this? I mean, just on a human level, I think we've kind of dehumanized the whole thing. And I said, what is it like to have to tell your son you can't be at his graduation? And he said, well, he's just finding out about it. He's a young boy. He doesn't really understand why it's happening. But it was just kind of a human element to me that we don't often stop and consider with this guy. He is a human being with a family. Yeah. And that's how I started the day.
I will tell you this. When I was starting my show at Newsmax, they brought in these media trainer type people. And they said, think of people who interview people well that you like. And we went through this exercise. But the bottom line is, they were trying to get me to focus on how to ask questions well. And I got to tell you, I listened to your whole interview, all 25 minutes, and you really ask really good questions.
Thank you.
And I think that what I loved about it, and I'm glad I wanted you to state it first, was you really did focus on the human side. You talked about the effect that the trials take on the family. You mentioned Barron, and he made fun of your hair.
He also never loses a sense of humor, does he?
But Grace, the thing that I thought was interesting is, and it was funny because I was going to make this a point, and then President Trump actually brought it up at the end of this interview with Chris. He's going off about Israel. He's going off about borders, issue, Title IX, LNG and energy in Pennsylvania, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of the interview, he says, you couldn't have Biden do this, could you? And I was actually going to bring this up today. I'd already made my note after listening to the interview with President Trump, Grace. And I thought one of the things that's so fascinating is that Trump says at the end of the interview with Chris de Gaulle, you know, Biden couldn't have done this.
But you couldn't even have this conversation with him. If you had this conversation with him, he would have been off the phone 15 minutes ago, like about a 5 seconds before it started, because frankly, he couldn't answer your questions. You know that.
And that's, I think, going to be a major issue in this campaign. The idea that he won't and he can't have these free exchanges.
Yeah, and I think he's doing a really brilliant job of highlighting all the things that Biden can't do. We saw in Harlem when he was at that bodega.
We love Trump! 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 We love Trump!
That for me was such a stunning visual because I thought, Biden just can't do this. And, you know, he can put out as many tweets as he wants. They can say as many things bad about Trump as they want. But they know that this is something tangible that people see that they cannot recreate. And so then a few days later, they go to the Wawa. And again, the juxtaposition is stunning. You go, they cleared out all these people. He's wandering around. It looks like a zombie apocalypse. He can't do it. And I loved Chris's interview with Trump. I think you did such a great job. But I do get the sense with Trump, like you said, you bring in the human element. And it's interesting because I think he's so desensitized now to everything that's happened to him that I noticed that he always goes back eventually to the issues and kind of like this long list of things he needs to get done. He never veers too far away from that. It's always at the top of his mind. And it's amazing how much he packs in to like one question.
Let me ask you this, as a female voter, and I say this because obviously I'm not trying to play identity politics, but that's something that pollsters talk about. I always have believed that when President Trump talks about himself, some of the personal things, as Chris tried to do this morning, I did it once in an interview where I said, there's a picture of your father behind you in the Oval Office. What would he think of you becoming president? I wish that President Trump talked more about himself and his, you know, not to sound weak, but like his feelings, like to say, you know, or I watched him when he consoled Karen, the wife of a fallen Navy SEAL. And it was like, I said, wow, I wish people could see more of that. Is that what you're talking about? And as a female voter, do you think that that would actually help? Or are you like, hey, I just want to know policy because that's what I'm voting for?
You know, it's funny because recently I was talking to my sister, right? She's Gen Z and she's pretty moderate for Gen Z, but a lot of her friends aren't. And I said, you know, all of the people your age or a good deal of them who were so worked up at the last election and thought the world was ending, do they have perspective now looking back on this and looking at Trump and going, oh, a lot of the things we were so upset about compared to what we're dealing with now, which is wars breaking out and high inflation and open border and crime. Do they look at that now from the lens of where we're at? And do they say, it wasn't that bad. We actually were kind of over-exaggerating. And the problem with that, though, and I am getting to your point, the problem with that, though, is in their minds, it was real. In their minds, he's like this awful, awful, awful person. And I don't think that 4 years later, they've had this epiphany. And so I don't know if him talking about the more personal elements of himself, while someone like Chris brings it out, and I love to hear it because, you know, I like to know the person I'm voting for that group of people that is so deranged, I don't think it's going to move the needle. That's just my feeling on it.
Chris, did you, I mean, I know you prefaced it with this woman coming up to your church, but were you, what went into the thinking behind that? Did you want to know more about his personal views on how this was affecting his family? Did you just think, hey, I'd like to reflect the views of this woman who brought it up to me at church? Like, what was the thinking behind that?
Yeah, I know the first lady, former first lady, is extremely private, and I don't know this. Maybe you'd know better than me. I don't gather she probably wants to discuss much of this or wants him to discuss it much, but they do have a son together, and I thought at least as a father, I have a son that's graduating next month, And my wife and I are going to be seated together watching our son graduate from high school. And just on a human level, I thought, what if some jerk judge told me I couldn't be there for that over something that I knew was completely preposterous and everybody from the outside looking in knew was preposterous. And
But beyond the preposterous, can I just say this? The thing that was funny, I know Alan Dershowitz brought this up a while ago. He doesn't, this in a normal case, he would just waive him being there. And it's not right. just the, it's like you're forcing him to be there. And that's what I think cool. is, it's the, you're, I get what you tried to bring out. And I totally was excited that you asked that. But I thought on a, like, this is worse. Like, you have to tell your son, the judge doesn't even require me to be there regardless of what I want to do, but he won't even have grant an exception for this.
Yeah, it's just cruelty. I mean, it's, and when yeah. you can, Grace just said, you know, and Grace made a fine point, and I couldn't agree with her more. There are people that have just been hardwired to believe the man is the devil incarnate, but there are people who are apolitical who say, well, okay, but gosh, are we that? Nasty? Do we have to be that inhumane? Right. I mean, I wonder if this judge hasn't pushed it to a point that it's gotten that bad that apolitical people say, okay, now that seems below the belt. I hope.
Can I ask you a question, Grace? The funny thing is I've known Donald Trump now, you know, quite a while. He's not a sit still kind of guy, right? He likes to move. And the idea for 4 weeks now, or six, depending on, you know, how, I mean, this will go on somewhere between that. Monday through Friday, with the exception of Wednesdays, he's got to be sitting there for 8 hours at a clip. And you can't play on your phone. They take the, like, I just wonder how he's going to handle, like, the next 4 to 6 weeks. I mean, just sitting there, what is he going to doodle?
Yeah, and we've heard reports from like Maggie Haberman and other people that he's been dozing off, which I kind of, it, my first instinct was he's trolling the people there. Like, it's such a big deal. It's this, you know, massive court case about this ridiculousness that he just wants to show them, like, this is how important I think this is. I'm going to fall asleep. But I really don't believe he would fall asleep just from, like you said, he tends to have, I don't want to diagnose him, but he reminds me of someone with ADD. Like, he's always on his phone. He's always moving. He's always up. He's always. So I just don't think he's the type of guy. He's not like my husband who could fall asleep anywhere. You know, he's kind of in the moment. And so I don't know, but I do think that what you just said about talking a lot, like, there are people who keep their energy up by being engaged. Like, they have right. to participate. And I think that's part of it, is just saying you can't speak and you can't really be part of it. You just have to sit here and take it. I wonder what that will do to his psyche for a while, because I can't imagine it's going to be good for the creative juices. But here's the part of it that I love. And here's the part of it that Democrats always overplay their hand. I mentioned it before, Trump being in Harlem. He's also, Sean, you know this better than anyone, he's not someone who's going to let any opportunities go to waste. He would have never been campaigning in New York. But if you're going to force him to be there for 6 weeks, he's going to go out, he's going to go in the street, he's going to talk to people. And suddenly, he's going to make everyone in New York a little bit uneasy, like all these politicians. Like, should we be kind of counter-campaigning against Donald Trump in sapphire blue New York? Maybe. Maybe you should. Maybe he's going to change hearts and minds there.
By the way, the point that you made, I want to make clear, because the media keeps talking about, like, oh, he can't campaign. When he went to that bodega in Harlem, everyone covered it like they will. He comes out to the media twice a day. Like, wherever you live, battleground state or not, you're getting that news. It's the lead on the morning shows every day. So this notion that somehow he's got to be, like, this isn't 1849 where you've got to roll your wagon into the town square and say, hear ye, I have come to the, you know, like, everyone in the world is going to see him. And those images in Harlem probably play great in Detroit, in Atlanta, and Philadelphia. So he doesn't necessarily, this is not the same campaign tactics that we had to use 50 or 60 years ago. Everybody's seeing what he does every day. But Chris, speaking of going places, you asked him about this Wildwood rally, Wildwood, New Jersey, South Jersey. He talked about the fact that I'm very familiar with it, obviously, because he had casinos in Atlantic City, Wildwood just right, you know, in that South Jersey, East Coast area. Here's my question, though. He talked about it in the context of Congressman Jeff Van Drew, which is, I get it. The last time he went there, Van Drew had just switched parties. He had done that in that epic Oval Office ceremony, and Trump says, I'll go campaign for you. This is a presidential election. We ran this map the other day of all the states in the path to 270. I've been doing campaigns for 30 years. I would love for Minnesota and New Jersey and Virginia and all these states to eventually come into play. New Jersey's not at the top of that list right now. I mean, like, I don't think that anybody, and yet the expense and the time of going to Wildwood, New Jersey, I don't get.
I do, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
It's still the Philadelphia media market.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. Wildwood is a wildly popular shore destination for Philadelphians and people in southeastern Pennsylvania. The Jersey Shore and South Jersey in particular is where a lot of Philadelphian and suburban Collar County Philadelphians go to summer. So he's trying to reach that market. South Jersey, extraordinarily conservative and friendly. Jeff Van Drew will be sort of the party chair of the state. And I would add, he can't travel too far given the trial that
we're talking about. Why not just go a little bit further west and get over the state line into Philadelphia, into Pennsylvania and get closer to Philly? Or, you know, he did that Shanksville one the other day. Like, there's plenty of options in Pennsylvania. I get it. People might be there vacationing, but that's, I don't know.
I don't know that he means it, but whatever. He said it twice. He said it about New York and now New Jersey. We're going to make a play. Why not? I'm not so sure that he's not, I don't know that he's going to win. Could he make it more competitive though? I mean, I've heard rumblings, you can confirm or deny it, that maybe he's even looking at Lee Zeldin as a potential VP pick. I don't know that he believes it, but it seems like he thinks New York might be something he could pick off. And why not maybe New Jersey? Jack Cittarelli, the Republican, almost knocked off Phil Murphy for governor in the last cycle.
I will say this, Grace. I don't want that to go unsaid, what Chris just mentioned. Lee Zeldin is the sleeper cell VP. Yeah. I think that there's something there. He'd be a great candidate, well-respected. He's got the military background. He served in Congress. That being said, and I'm glad we said this on the record, so when the tape comes back at some point, we can say, you know, we were the ones who said, because I think Trump always had something up his sleeve and Lee Zeldin's never on any official list. And that always makes me wonder because everyone knows how well thought of he is. But I get it. I'm not saying that when I did the map to 270 the other day, I said I would love to see Minnesota come closer. And I do think that that's a possibility, right? I do think I live here in Virginia. I would love to see Virginia come back into play. But we're not there yet. Why not concentrate? Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, all of that area is in play. Why not just go a little west? You have limited days that you can campaign.
I think you're getting the same juice. I think you,
Grace,
literally get the same media coverage.
I just, Grace, do you? Where are you on this? Are you a Stigall or a
Spicer?
You
know what? I'm always on Stigall.
You know why? Just as a side note, Chris is all for this because the Trump, if you haven't listened to the interview, and please go do, we'll put the link in. It's because Chris got invited to the rally by Trump twice. He said, Chris, are you coming? This is the only reason. This is the only reason. Stigall,
admit it, Stigall. Another piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. See, this is it. Stigall just has to say it's a great idea because he was invited.
Are you suggesting that I should try to talk the man out of his own rally, Sean? Is that what you'd have me do?
No, I think that if he had said, like, good, I'm glad you're not coming, then you would be like, yeah, it was a bad idea. You got personally invited by the President of the United States, and so you think it's a great idea.
Sure.
Grace is like, come to Boston. Detail. Grace is going to make the case that Boston's in play.
Boston is in play. We're very open-minded here. No, what I was going to say is Chris just said something that really stuck out to me. He said, I don't think that, you know, New York, New Jersey, that, you know, he's written them off. Or Chris, I don't want to, people can rewind 10 seconds and hear exactly how he phrased it. But I think that's kind of the beauty of Trump. And it's also, to your point, Sean, it's also a little bit of an Achilles heel he has. But it's for me why I think he's a great president of the United States more so than Biden, because when you listen to Biden talk, like they made him out to be this unifier in chief, whatever. But when he talks about Republican voters, he has such disdain for them. Like he has such disdain, and not for the politicians, not for Marjorie Taylor Greene. He might say things here and there, but really he has a lot of hate for the people in this country who did not vote for him. And one thing that I've always loved about Trump is that he can hate Hillary Clinton, he can hate Joe Biden, he can make fun of all these people. But the voters themselves, and I think part of it is his ego, and I think part of it is just his love for the country. He never writes anybody off. In his mind, Donald Trump thinks, you give me 5 minutes with somebody, they're going to love me. And we all know people like that who it's like, you don't like me right now, but if you give me 5 minutes of your time, I'm going to make you love me. And it might be sometimes very delusional, but it's that which makes him, when he gets in the White House, a better president, because he's never looking at anybody in this country as someone he has to write off or someone he shouldn't care about. He thinks of them all as potential voters every single time.
That is so smart. And may I just add to Grace's point? Brilliant what she just said. He loves people. He gets, remember, she was just talking about that energy. He gets energy from people. And remember Atlanta. He goes down to that Chick-fil-A. It's almost exclusively young black people. And one young black woman shouted, I don't care what they say, I love you. And he said, get over here. Give me a hug. It was killer.
Yeah.
And that was beamed all over the world. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that gives him juice and the message people ought to see.
In these times of economic uncertainty, are you looking for a way to diversify? I know I was. And so I called my friends at Bishop Gold. 844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean and have a conversation with them about how to secure your financial future using precious metals. Now, I did that. Now, so you may be at home right now and say, I've got an old 401k, an IRA, or I'm just looking to expand my portfolio. I picked up the phone, I called them, and I explained to them my financial situation, what I was looking into, and they created a mix that would work for me. You should do the same. These are the people that I trust with my money. I invested my money with Bishop Gold Group because they're full of integrity and transparency. They can tell you exactly how the system works, how you can hold it, how they can hold it, how you liquidate it in times of need. So if you've got that old 401k, you've got that old IRA, or you're sitting back right now concerned about the future and thinking, I need to diversify, call Bishop Gold Group, 844-984-1616, or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to begin your financial journey with precious metals. And by the way, you get a free gift because you're coming through me. I'll take it a step further since we're all jumping on the Grace bandwagon. all these folks in the media wig out every time he meets with a strong man and a dictator. He thinks he can win anyone over. And the more that you tell him no one's ever met with Kim Jong-un, no one's ever, you know, persuaded Putin to do whatever, his like challenge accepted. And his view is, I can do this. I'm a salesman at heart. I know how to close the deal. I'll get him to do it. And the media loves to freak out. But the bottom line is that, and you watched it over 4 years, Trump's view is get me in the room with Xi, get me in the room with Kim Jong-un, get me in the room with Putin, get me in the room with Bolsonaro. I'll get what we need. I'll close the deal. And that's the same thing. That's it. He's like, hey, and I've told people all the time, it's the same thing with reporters. People always blew me up. Why is he meeting with this person from the New York Times or the Washington Post or Bob Woodward? And I'll say, because he thinks, and a lot of times he's right, that if I can just get one-on-one with him, he is unbelievably charming. And he can woo somebody over and he can make his points. And I think that goes to this idea. Don't tell him you can't win New York or New Jersey. I get it. I saw it in 2016. Go back, rewind the tape even further and you'll hear him talking about playing in New York, whatever. I get it. But at the end of the day, you're in court 4 days a week. You get 1 day right now to go campaign. And my point is, if you want to say, hey, here's the deal. We put Pennsylvania in the bag. We put Wisconsin in the bag. We do that with Michigan. I don't care where you want to go after that. But until then, going to New Jersey, and I'm with all due respect, this is not a slight, it's just you're not there yet. And also going to Wildwood in South Jersey, Chris, your political analysis is spot on. It's like, yes, a ton of people there, but guess what? There's central and northern New Jersey that ain't South Jersey. But I want to transition to something else that came up in the interview that I was going to talk about anyway. And then there you go. You led the way. You asked him about Mike Johnson on the heels of this Ukraine foreign policy funding vote.
Well, remember, the speakership we're talking about has one, you know, we're a majority by one vote. And you can't really get too tough when you look, we all want to be tough guys and all. And I have a lot of friends and frankly, I have friends on both sides. You know, if you look at the vote, a lot of people, a lot of Republicans, a lot of good Republicans voted for it. But, you know, Mike is in there and he's trying. And some people were disappointed. And a lot of people were very disappointed that nothing happened with the border. The border, you know, I'll straighten out the border. I don't need anything from Congress.
it sounded like he said he's a rock and a hard place. He doesn't really have the votes or the numbers to be a tough guy. Kind of sounded like he was saying, take it easy on Mike Johnson. He further went on to say, it sounded to me like Ukraine is important here and we shouldn't let it topple. That was sort of my interpretation. You may have heard it differently, but that was sort of the soft thing I heard him say.
I totally agree with your assessment. Grace, the thing that was interesting is, you know, he literally said, Mike Johnson's got a one-seat majority. It's hard to be the tough guy when you got that. I basically need to get reelected. Do you think that helps Mike Johnson right now, getting a lifeline from the president?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think that the thing about people who really support Donald Trump, and a lot of them call into my show, and I know, Chris, I'm sure they call into your show too, they are pretty good at compartmentalizing. Like they don't consider Trump's opinion on every single thing. So if they feel a certain way and then someone says, well, Trump says this, they're like, I love Trump, but he's wrong on this. And then they just move on and then they continue to feel the way they feel. As far as him having a very slim majority and, you know, he can't be a tough guy, I get that. I think the part of it for me that was so confusing is he was so adamant about using any leverage possible to get security and funding for the border. And it was really a part of the last 9 months of listening to Mike Johnson. And then after he got this intelligence report that he can't tell us anything about, which I understand that's part of the skiff, they can't really like reveal what's going on. Then he changed his ways. And for me, I look at that and I say, it feels, to me, the skiff thing feels like a cop-out. Like everyone goes behind the scenes and they get this report that they can't talk about, they can't confirm, that you just tell us, like, believe us, we need this funding. And it's like, I'm sick of that. I need more than that. I need to hear more than just, I have to believe you or else, dot, dot, dot. So I get that Mike Johnson's in a tough spot. I don't know what the solution is. I mean, we had the circus with Kevin McCarthy. I'm not suggesting we do that again, but I don't think that, I don't think the Republicans will be satisfied with that.
Just so everyone gets the context about what Grace is talking to. So the White House has a briefing where they bring Johnson into a secure location and show him some fairly highly classified intelligence. And Johnson comes out and says, look, we got to support Ukraine. Chris, I get that. Okay. Hey, here's what's at stake. Here's what Russia is going to do. Here's what this means. And we can show you da, 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 you know, and Johnson goes, oh my gosh. Okay. And then that's where I'd say, you're right. We got to do something. Which is why the same intelligence people, the FBI director, the DNI, all say we've got a problem at our own southern border. So why don't we do that too? And I felt like we missed a massive opportunity. They scared him into voting what they wanted, and he should have said, fair enough. That's the problem. I feel like we missed, not just we missed, this was it. This was the opportunity, and he blew it.
It's funny. Trump said similarly on that point, I don't need the House. I don't need Congress. I don't need the Speaker. I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
Which kind of reminded me, it's funny, as we debate the border and we debate funding and all of these sorts of things, Trump sort of snapped me back into my memory that, oh, that's right. He did and has and can secure the border without the help of Congress. We've kind of just fallen into this trap. Like we need the House to do it. We don't. Joe Biden could, as we all know, on his own. But I agree with Grace 100%. The problem with these people when they come out and say, believe us, it's important. Eric Schmidt, the Missouri senator, said on my show several weeks ago, ever since I got to Washington, D.C., everyone in this town has been singularly obsessed with Ukraine and funding Ukraine, and I can't explain it. And that's my problem, just as Grace said. I wish someone, anyone, the president, former president, Mike Johnson, any Democrat, I wish they could just look us in the eye and say, here's why Ukraine is important. Here's what we know, and here's what you need to know. None of us have had that experience.
But can I just say this? I can explain it. I mean, I think, number one, we made an agreement with them, first of all, in the 90s, that said, if you give up your nuclear weapons, which were a threat to us, then we will defend you. So that's number one. Number two, Russia aggression affects a further growth into parts of Europe that we would have to get drawn in because of our Article 5 NATO obligations, right? So there's a bunch of cases that don't involve NATO. The problem I have, Grace, is this decision that the media is like, you're either for Ukraine or you're against it. My view is I don't mind supporting and helping Ukraine. Number one, there's no strategy. Chris asked him about that this morning. Chris asked, you know, Donald Trump about this. We don't have a strategy. We don't have what an end state looks like. What does success look like? We just keep sending money and we're not given a strategy or an end state. And then lastly, why can't we agree that we will solve our problems first on the border? It's not either or. It's we can do a lot. Even if you disagree with Ukraine, why are we like waving Ukrainian flags before we wave an American flag? It's just this false choice that we've been given.
Yeah, and it's crazy too, because you almost want to say like, okay, just show us your work. Show us your work. Show us, like, remember in school, you can't just put the answer down. You've got billions of dollars. Show us how you got here. But the other part of it, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying before, Sean, which I agree with. Let's say you're Mike Johnson, okay, and you get this intelligence briefing and it's super classified. You see all this stuff, it's super scary, and they say to you, this is why we need funding for Ukraine. You're absolutely right, Sean. I don't understand why at that point he can't go, I agree, this is big stuff. Now, if it's that big, you guys should be more than willing to do what we need to do here. It seems like the urgency and the rush and the pressure only applies to Republicans. Like, this is such a big deal that you need to pass it this weekend. And it's like, well, hold on a second. If it's such a big deal, then our leverage that we have should get us border security, no problem. If it's so scary and it's so big, then our leverage just increases. But it seems like in all of these scenarios, our leverage is non-existent. Like Republicans, and I just think it goes back to Republicans just not knowing how to play it as well. Yes. Or just being too weak, because this would never happen with Democrats. If they knew they had something we wanted, they would milk that sucker for all it was worth.
Chris, Grace talks about the urgency. We need to pass Ukraine funding. It must happen. Their resources are running dry. The ammunition is low. Okay. The same people that are giving classified briefings are equally giving briefings saying that there's a danger at our southern border as to who is coming in and the threat they pose. The people who mowed down 140 people in a Russian theater have publicly stated that they want to destroy America. ISIS-K, that's their goal. All of these other people who are sitting around the country chanting death to America, I'll take them at their word. They want to kill Americans. People are flowing over the southern border. Those same people, the director of national intelligence, the director of the FBI, all share the same assessment. Where's the urgency on our border?
That is what President Trump said when I asked him. I said, China, Hamas, Iran, Russia, the border, where do you put them? What keeps you up at night? He did come back around to saying he imagines that he has to give the edge to the border being the single biggest threat for the very reasons you just said. Islamo supremacy, my gosh, you may fear Russia a little bit or China a little bit, but Islamists, they're a special kind of wicked, and you don't have to tell the Israelis about that, which is also what is so perplexing to me is, but the same people waving the Ukrainian flag, so many of them want Israel to stand down right now. I should think Islamo supremacy is the thing, perhaps the single greatest threat we all share as free people globally.
Yeah,
and coming across our southern border.
So let me get back to Mike Johnson for a second. Grace, does Mike Johnson hang on? And if so, for how long?
Okay, so I was reading today that Representative James Clyburn had said that if there was this attempt to vacate Mike Johnson, a motion to vacate, I know at this point we have Marjorie Taylor Greene, we have Tom Massey who are on board with it. Clyburn suggested that maybe, like the Democrats did this weekend, that they would offer their support to Mike Johnson. And So yeah, if the deep state wants you in there, like if both sides of the aisle, because he has a certain amount of Republican support, like we know that based off the voting over the weekend, there are Republicans who agree with Mike Johnson. And then on top of that, if James Clyburn and his party decide, listen, we're going to throw this guy a bone, I think he hangs on. And I don't know if that's good or bad for us if he hangs on, like the normal Republicans who just want our border secure and maybe want to stop sending billions of dollars to defending other people's borders at all times. I don't know if that's good or bad for us, but I will say selfishly, I'm the circus of electing the speaker, I find so, and I'm just now I'm just talking from a perspective of someone who does on air stuff. And maybe Chris, maybe you had a lot of fun with it. I find it to be a little bit like, oh, every day speaker nonsense. So, right.
Well,
I don't know.
So Chris, let me lead in with this. Ro Khanna, a congressman from California.
That's exactly where I was going.
Okay.
Yes.
So, well, I'll just lead it. And what, tell me, oh, you say it.
Well, just that he said that, he did the right thing here, meaning Mike Johnson. Ro Khanna, Democrat, saying of Mike Johnson, he did the right thing here and he deserves to keep his job until the end of his term. I would vote to support him and help him stick around.
Key phrase, end of his term. They're not looking to hang this guy out for to become Speaker of the House emeritus for a while. Like they're willing to say, hey, look, we got a couple months left. We got a couple other things to do. We think we can play ball with you, but we'll let you hang on for a second. So I want to get you to weigh in on the question of the grace. Does he hold on to his job? And if so, how long?
Until the election's over. I mean, they don't want him sticking around, you know, if the Republicans should hang on to the House, which doesn't look likely right now. But I think they're perfectly fine to let him stick around. And quite frankly, never underestimate the Democrats' brilliance to undermine Mike Johnson just by blowing him kisses.
Yeah.
They know.
I mean, this is one of those ones where once in a while you endorse your opponent just so that they get, I mean, like, that's the way you screw them, right? You go, oh, that's I'm a huge supporter of Mike Johnson. And it's like, no. I was a conservative MAGA guy. Now I'm, so let me flip the question, Grace. Does Marjorie Taylor Greene, we know she's filed these motions to vacate, but she hasn't made it what they call privileged, which means that bring it up and then there's a vote. Tom Massey, the congressman from Kentucky, has already said he's on board and there's one other that's on board as well, right? So you got three. That would, like, on a vote, that means that he would lose the vote if it's just Republicans. But the key question is there going to be a vote? Will she pull the trigger and make this privileged and make the House vote on it?
I kind of think she will, only because she wants the record to show where she stands on this and that she actually did have the backbone to put it forward. I don't think that, like you said, the numbers are going to be in her favor. I don't think it necessarily looks good for us to with the infighting. But it's also, you get to a point where it's like, why not? You know what I mean? Because I kind of felt this way too about, well, if we enter into the circus again, where they were able to vacate Johnson's seat and bring in someone else, what if they get Hakeem Jeffries? But I was asking Chris Bedford from the Blaze, and he said to me, what difference would it make? Like, at this point, Hakeem Jeffries, Mike Johnson, they're all kind of along with everything.
Look, I think that one of the things that people have to understand, and this is where I would take issue with anybody who says that, if you don't control the House, you have nothing. Because you can make those motions to impeach, you can have hearing, we wouldn't have subpoena power. You may not be happy with everything that's happening, and I get it. I share that frustration. But trust me when I tell you that look at the last 2 years of Donald Trump's first term versus the first two. The Democrats in control of the House, legislatively, procedurally, in terms of wielding hearings and subpoenas, is a horrible, horrible thing. And it would make a difference. And so we may not be happy. Go ahead.
Right, Sean. The only thing I'll say is, I get what you're saying as someone who's been in it and someone who understands in the weeds of all of this, but I'm saying for the average American voter who's frustrated, who's watching this, their minds, a lot of people do reach that lever where they go ahead, put in Hakeem Jeffries, because I'm so done with all these people. I hope that Hakeem Jeffries takes over. That's what I've been hearing and from people.
I know, I hear it all the time, and I'm sure you do too, Chris. The difference is, part of what I hope I do is give people some context, because it's like breaking up with the girl that you really didn't want to break up with, and you go, fine, we'll just break up. And then 2 days later, you're like, wow, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, and now I can't get her back. And my point is, you may not love Mike Johnson, but at the end of the day, if we lose him and we lose this majority, I get the frustration that you're describing, Grace, that so many people have. But the problem is that if we don't do our part to tell them, here are the consequences of a Hakeem Jeffries thing, it would literally put this country in a horrible, horrible place. DC becomes a state, legislation to expand the court, blah, blah, blah. The woke stuff, the Title IX stuff that Chris brought up. I mean, it doesn't stop. They are not going to miss an opportunity if they get the majority back to utterly change the trajectory of this country. Chris,
what? So frustrates all of us, and I don't mean to be redundant to Grace's great points there, but I asked Trump today, you know, the Senate just ignored the House when they sent articles of impeachment for Alejandro Mayorkas. They just ignored it. And Trump eventually said, yeah, that would have been nice if Mitch had done that for me, too. And that was my point. Like, our side doesn't do that.
It's funny. He goes, they don't have a Romney and a Murkowski and a Collins. I mean, I love the way he answered it. But he was right. Like, our side is always like, well, let us delineate the da-da-da-da. And they were like, dismiss.
Yeah.
I think that's the big difference. All right, guys. Look, I appreciate you kicking off the Monday with us. Always a great start to the week. As I mentioned at the top, let me just remind everybody, we're 197 days out from the election. So it's actually not that far away. We got a lot to go. I appreciate both of you guys being with us. Congratulations, Chris, on the great interview. Are you going to go to Wildwood to the thing? To the rally?
As long as I'm invited. He told me to speak with his people. Now, I don't know if that was a great brush off or
no,
not.
No, he said it twice. He's got great
he'll
people.
He'll probably give you a shout out.
Yeah. he'll get to see that great. He'll get to see the great hair that you have.
Although you want me to scold him and tell him he shouldn't be there. Why are you wasting your time here? Spicer says you should get out.
Hey, no, it says that you should go to Pennsylvania. All right. Anyway, guys, thanks a lot. All right, for everyone, I appreciate you kicking off your week with us. Please continue to subscribe. Hit that button on YouTube to get the notification when these come out. Rumble, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get it. I don't care. Double down, get them all. We'll see you back here tomorrow. We got a great show and a great week ahead for you.